Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to LL Research Radio Program In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert. Today is Friday, March 16th, 2012. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. LL Research has two websites, an archive website at llresearch.org, homes over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more, and a community-oriented website at bringforth.org, and that's bring, the number 4th.org, featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. My name's Monica Liel. I'm your host, and I'll be asking Carla questions that come from you. If you'd like to ask Carla a question, please join the chat room on the webpage for In the Now at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. Or you can call us live and ask your question live on the air, 646-595-2294. Be sure to press the 1 key when you're prompted, and I will bring you into the show. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Monica Liel, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert of LL Research. Carla, how are you doing today?
Hey, Monica. It's been a good day, good week, and a much busier week than my husband had expected. We have gotten so much good weather so quickly that he's mowing all of a sudden, 2-3 weeks ahead of schedule. The song of a lawn man is not always a happy one.
Mm-hmm.
This is unusual, but at any rate, he's grateful for the work and just surprised that it started so early this year. But I had a neat thing happen this week. I think it was during this last week that I finished the poetry. I've gone through all my poetry for, you know, the last 6 decades. I created it so that people could take a look at my poetry on the Carla's Niche, you know, in the archive site in the library. So I was really glad to work and see that finished because I've been working on that for about 6 months. You know, when you're not feeling terribly well, but you can get a little bit done, it feels really good to just do that little bit. So I get a poem done and
yeah,
you know, I got that formatted, okay. And now I'm kind of fishing around. I don't know whether I want to go in for a really huge project, which is editing a Wanderer's Handbook, or do another short project and sort of pace myself.
Mm.
I don't know. I'll have to figure that one out. But at any rate, it's been a great week, and I've really enjoyed seeing those poems go off. I'm like a storekeeper, Monica. I'm this little storekeeper, and I'm thinking, okay, well, what's on the shelves over here? And yeah, okay, that's pretty good. Okay, well, here's some stuff that we can put up over there. You know, we want to help our people.
Mm-hmm.
Just want to have inventory in the stores just in case it's something they might need. You know, my poems aren't very good, but I write about metaphysical subjects and love and junk and, you know, the usual. And so I think that sometimes in a certain mood at a certain point, you know, one of my poems might be just the same. You never know. So as long as
I was just going to say that, it might reach out to a person in a particular point in their life where they read some poem and it really reaches them. So you just never know.
Yeah. Well, I tried to do the best I could for the poetry by segregating it to a certain degree. I separated my early poems from everything else because my early poems might as well be in Portuguese. I separated love poetry because that has its own flavor. I separated out metaphysical poems. And then I segregated Christian poems. And anything that didn't fit in any of those just went in general. you know. But I needed to get the Christian out of everybody's face because I wrote a lot of Christian poetry in my lifetime. Words have a way of going through my mind. And, you know, I'll sing something in church or I'll recite it at the time for the psalm, and it goes especially well. And, you know, it's almost like you're saying it over to yourself and seeing how it would go and beginning to feel it. And, you know, any of those psalms is very, very grateful to the person that wants to create another rendering of those words, because just for some reason it's just easy. And I guess it's because it's the Bible words have been in our consciousness for so long as a culture that they take on an addition weight, an additional weight of ponderousness. But at any rate, let's get on to other things.
Okay, how about the opening riff for tonight?
All right.
We have a quote from session 4.6. Questioner, is the large pyramid at Giza still usable for this healing purpose, or is it no longer functional? Ra, I am Ra. That, like so many other pyramid structures, is like the piano out of tune. It, as this instrument would express, plays the tune, but oh so poorly. The disharmony jangles the sensitive. Only the ghost of the streaming still remains, due to the shifting of the streaming points, which is in turn due to the shifting electromagnetic field of your planet, due also to the discordant vibratory complexes of those who have used the initiatory and healing place for less compassionate purposes. 4.7. Questioner, would it be possible to build a pyramid and properly align it and use it today from the materials that we have available? I am Ra. It is quite possible for you to build a pyramid structure. The material used is not critical, merely the ratios of time-space complexes. However, the use of the structure for initiation and healing depends completely upon the inner disciplines of the channels attempting such work.
Thanks, Monica. I picked this one out because, well, in the short run, because I ran across it in doing my morning offering and doing readings between my husband and I, who are always reading the Law of One through, but, you know, always a different random piece. We just read them through and then start over and read them through again. And I was thinking about a friend of mine that I had corresponded with a couple of months ago, who was off on yet another trip to the Holy Land to meditate at Giza. So I know that there are people that are involved with that. She was, in fact, one of the ladies that was involved with Andrea Guharich back in the day. And she is very faithful and goes and meditates in all those great old places to try to bring the consciousness of the planet as light as it could possibly go at this time. But what I brought it up for was because I love the way that figure talking about the person that is at the heart of the pyramid, the healer, is made. I love the way that makes me feel, because what they're basically saying is much easier to understand than a lot of different ways of saying thoughts are things. They're saying that we, as crystalline ethical structures, you know, the discipline of the personality, the development of a magical personality, we are the equivalent of, and perhaps even superior to, the large pyramid at Giza, all of the clever measurements and sacred geometry that goes into that. I did experiment just a tiny little bit with a pyramid that I could be under. It was a big pyramid, and we made it out of closet rods that you would hang in a closet for clothing. And we made it about that big and then put a porch seat under it so that if you sat in that particular place. You were in the influence of the pyramid. It was pretty rough. We did do that for a while on Douglas Boulevard. No, not on Douglas Boulevard, on Watterson Trail. And I have nothing to report from that experiment. We didn't do it with enough assiduity. But at any rate, think of yourself, people, not as inadequate to this task before us of embracing a new world, but just as ready as you'll ever be. You have had a whole lifetime to get you to this point of crystallization. You've had a whole lifetime of making compassionate choices to make you steady on your feet now. And it's time to step up and have fun with it. And I truly, truly hope you can see yourself and feel yourself to be the crystal in the middle of the pyramid.
Can you elaborate a little bit about what that means to be a crystalline being and the magical personality?
Mm-hmm. Well, in the basic healing powers of the pyramid, it was felt that you had a twisting, upward spiraling line of light that was going through the pyramid. You had it was twisting into a candle flame end as it came in through the bottom of the pyramid. That was the first half twist, was a scoop. And then the second twist was the queen's chamber. The third twist was the king's chamber. It was at the king's chamber that you were doing the healing, and at the queen's chamber you were working on initiation. But the point of the person was that the person was that crystal within the pyramid that caused all of the sacred geometries of the pyramid to come to life and to work. And that the more crystalline a person's magical personality, the more powerfully that entity was able to focus as a channel for healing energy to come through, the more completely crystallized, the more able he would be as a healer. And I certainly see it in my channeling that it isn't until you become far more willing to be in a crystalline position, at least for a little while, that you can say that you're absolutely trustworthy. You know, it takes a lot of discipline to move to that particular place where you obviously want to be. But we, all of us, have that opportunity all the time to be as that crystal in the midst of the pyramid that makes it all work. So good luck, everybody.
Okay. And the magical personality itself is something that you become when... Could you explain that a little bit? I mean, what is the magical personality?
Well, that's a good question, because it does really pull a lot of thought into a focus here. The magical personality, according to those of Ra, is that portion of the self which is awakened once the self realizes the true nature of the self. Once you realize that you are one thing and that all of the universe is that one thing with you, and that one thing is love. And you realize that you're living in a universe of love, and everything that you have to do with is love. There is born within you an awareness of spiritual reality and essence that gives you the potential power under your feet to stand and say, I know who I am. I know that I am a portion of the Creator, and that the nature of the Creator and of myself is love. And I'm here to find out how to do that, because it's not always that easy. So you get, at that point, you begin to get the feeling of just how powerful you really are as a person, and just how you can focus into situations, especially when you recognize that you're in a situation of crux. so that you can make the best possible choice. A lot of times, it's the first choice that seems really obvious. You know, if you thought about it a little while, you might find a second one that had much more compassion. So, I think that a lot of the development of spiritual maturity is just letting spaciousness grow around the moment whenever there's a decision to be made. Just don't, well, let's see, what were we going to talk about tonight? I will give you the best I can until Monica figures out something else to do. No, there's nothing, she's not telling me anything in Skype. Okay, Monica, I'm looking at the Skype Monica's writing to me. Oh, good. Monica can hear me. This is always so suspenseful. What shall we do? Her line is still open. She called in again. And that line is still open, too. So, what do we need now? How about I just talk about sex? Okay. Okay, and can you work the controls at the end? After I finish, okay. Okay, we've got a plan, guys. This is the rest of the time. Is there was one thread that Monica said she thought would be really interesting for me to get into, and it was just on sexuality. The thread sort of started out being about sexual addiction, but the complexities of sexuality are such that it's very difficult to generalize. And you can't talk about addiction without talking about a lot of other shadows, a lot of other nuances of sexuality. First of all, let me say that I'm very biased towards sexuality, personally, in my life. In my observation, I have the kind of personality that tends to appreciate beauty. The beauty of an idea, or a child's wonder, or a butterfly, or, you know, call it what you will. There's beauty everywhere. And I tend to value the beautiful. And sex, well, the feelings, subjective feelings of one's sexuality seem to me to include some of the most incredibly high vibrational, sacred and precious possible vibrations that you can experience in this lifetime. Those of Ra talked about sexuality in their density, which happens to be the sixth density, the density of unity, as being like fusion, and that they would go to their sun, which happens also to be ours, to take part in the sunlight as part of the sexual expression of their kind. And their bodies, of course, are light vehicles. So it's all a beautiful thought, and we are all beautiful thoughts. And the body making love is, I think, the furthest into the realm of the totally hidden that you can go. You can't take your insight and your intuition more than just so far. You can't take your intellect more than just so far. And it's the product of all of those aspects of who you are in so many ways, not just in the more obvious ways of how old are you and how do you feel about sex. But there's so much that offers richness enough to last a lifetime. I noticed when I was collecting my poetry that it was not, telling it from me anyway, going to be predictable that love was all fun, because most of my love poetry had a good deal of angst, and, you know, agita, and difficulties. You know, there were difficulties that called me to talk about these things poetically as I could. And not so much the happy times as the difficult times, although I'm always grateful when the happy times speak. But there's a lot of pain wrapped up in people's relationships with each other. And the fact that sexuality is a springboard of that in most normal cases where sexuality is, you know, figures in, is part of that. And again, it's so much more than just sexuality, because I'm a woman and he's a man. Okay, how do you split up the household duties? You know, what are all the old things that people get so tired of hearing about from women? Well, he doesn't do his fair share, and well, you know, I have more to do at the office, blah blah blah. And you know, there just seem to be so many ways to get off kilter and so many ways to get out of balance with each other. And of course, what you're learning here isn't just simple sexuality. It's not just about experiencing true sexual energy exchange. It's also about learning how to be a person. It's about becoming able to move with your partner from red gray to orange to yellow to green to blue, and only then to indigo and violet. You give yourself over to sexuality with only a tiny portion of yourself, unless you are moving all of yourself, you know, your entire attention to the relationship with the person with whom you're lovers. So if a person isn't worth that kind of care, you might want to rethink the relationship. But if you can find a person who is worth that, let's see, I just heard a little note from Monica. Do you want to write anything?
Uh-huh. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, you can thank my son, David, for figuring it out.
Oh, my gosh, that's so brilliant of you. Thank you.
He says thank you.
And tell him to write down exactly what happened, because we need to know.
It was something with a Skype setting that I don't know why it happened, but he fixed it, so we're back.
Very good. Well, I've certainly talked about sex quite a while. Is there any way you'd like to direct my comments?
I have no idea what you just said, because I was frantically trying to run into the other room trying to get my son to save me, and he did. So anyway, if you want to talk some more, that I don't know what you were talking about. So do you want to continue, or?
Well, I don't know. Let's see. Let me think. Basically, I was talking about how much more sexuality involves than just the question of getting sex or having sex or being sexually active, how it moves you into every service of your life. It moves you into the service of taking care of your family and taking care of your kids and taking care of the institutions that support your family and your kids. There is so much more to becoming a good companion for each other than simply finding out how to make love and then performing that act, that it's almost too different to notice. You almost can't talk about it, because from the standpoint of the least demanding sexual encounter, an encounter in a bar means nothing. Two people that are attuned to each other and truly meet each other in the now, there is an infinity of vibration. So the addiction to sexuality usually comes in not because of sexual things, but other things, things that sex is like comfort food, I guess. You know, it's just you keep wanting to have more comfort food. So I think that I've seen people in the throes of sexual addiction, and it didn't look like it was any fun at all. I'm just so glad that it's never occurred to me to be that swung one way or the other by something like, not that I would say that pornography is a wonderful thing and that we should fight for the rights of pornographers to, you know, to show their wares, but and is a human body, and given that nothing unfortunate is going on the screen, it's people doing natural things, and every once in a while, I'm sure that there is a really brilliantly done X-rated movie. So it's probably good in all you know, facets of the art world, bar none. So when people talk about sexual addiction, I think to myself how, yes, I suppose there are just pure sexual addictions, but I always wonder to myself, what was the tipping point? What caused that person to move from enjoying recreational sex, or details of it, and being stuck with being addicted to it? I'm sure that the answers to that would help everybody that's stuck. And it's no joke. It's certainly no joke. People in my family have had their bouts with it, and it's a killer of marriages, as you can imagine. And it's just your heart breaks for the person that has been so silly and doesn't really know why. So that's about my take on addiction, is that it's a very sad thing, and probably not so much to do with sex at all.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, that was the topic of one of the discussion threads at the Bring Forth Forum, and we had a few others about sexuality from a spiritual perspective as well. And some of them got into a pretty lively discussion about a particular quote. So I was wondering if I could read that brief quote, and it's session 87.27. I am Ra. You are correct in assuming that the energy of which we speak in discussing sexual energy transfers is a form of vibratory bridge between space-time and time-space. Although this distinction is not apart from that which follows may shed light upon that basic statement. Due to the veiling process, the energy transferred from male to female is different from that transferred from female to male. Due to the polarity difference of the mind-body-spirit complexes of male and female, the male stores physical energy, the female mental and mental-emotional energy. When third-density sexual energy transfer is completed, the male will have offered the discharge of physical energy. The female is thereby refreshed, having far less physical vitality. At the same time, if you will use this term, the female discharges the efflux of its stored mental and mental-emotional energy, thereby offering inspiration, healing, and blessing to the male, which by nature is less vital in this area. So I suggested this quote because there got, like I said, some pretty lively discussion about what this means in terms of gender roles and not being stuck in gender roles. And yet there clearly is some kind of a difference with the male and female energy here.
I think there is. And I think that the subtleties of that go into material that I've seen in Confederation sources as widely divergent as Heton and Ra. About now what was I going to tell you? Say that again. What you were asking me.
What does Ra mean here about the differences between the male and female energies? There was some question about, okay, well, does that mean that we're stereotyped into a certain role?
No, that's not it. That's what I was trying to bring in. I asked my brain to go too far. There's a wonderful place where the Ra group points out that it's not just a matter of the male and the female, because you have a male portion, you have a female portion, you have a portion that's both at once. You have a portion that's neither. You know, you have different balances. It's not just either or. It's a little of this, a little of that. And through different incarnational experiences, you may have leaned on certain archetypal tweaks to the relationship in ways that, you know, other people might not have, which mean that you end up getting like a 12-point male-female, male-female, you know, matching. So you don't just have male-female, you know, tab A, slot B. You've got a more jagged landscape, and you've got a more delicate fit, and a lot of people don't fit at all. And it's because they're not just male and female. They're also, you know, male or female in the sense that they are artistic, male or female in the sense that they are, you know, and you fill in the blank. So it's a very complex thing, but it is true that a good relationship of two souls that love each other is one in which there's a potential difference. And when you come together sexually and physically and touch into each other's bodies and minds and spirits and do that very, you know, intentionally, you are sharing energy. It's an energy transfer that goes both ways. And it's a win-win situation because you're giving from excess. What woman could ever have all hope and inspiration beaten from her? The woman doesn't exist. We all have that in our souls. And guys just tend to have more physical energy, just in general. It's just a general thing. But I certainly have found it true in my life that it makes a huge difference in how I get around from day to day as to whether or not I'm in a relationship. I'm tremendously helped. And I think my husband would probably say the same thing.
Okay. Wonderful.
So I don't think that it's so easy to find, though, Monica. And the reason it's so hard to discover is there's more to getting yourself into a sacred relationship with your husband or your lover than you think there is. It's more than just agreeing that you're not going to giggle when you figure out how you're going to make the switch over to being more sacred about it. You commit to each other in a creative experiment of worship if you attempt to move more and more into sacred sexuality. It's extremely creative. It's extremely powerful. But there's so much that has to be let down, so many walls that have to come down between any two people, that relationship has to be crystal clear so that you can communicate. And at that point, you know, the sky's the limit, and I've been absolutely amazed at what Jim and I have found. But it isn't something that you just sort of fall into. It's definitely that which is a wonderful celebration.
Well, I would agree with that, having been in a monogamous, committed relationship for 29 years. So I definitely would agree with that. So, okay, well, they got to hear your thoughts on sex after we had these technical difficulties. So
we'll try next week not to have any of those.
Yeah, we do try. Okay, well, I'm going to move on to the next question. And by the way, to our listeners, if you would like to ask a question on the air, there's still time. You can call 646-595-2294. 646-595-2294, but you need to press the 1 key if you want to join the show, and I'll unmute you and you can ask your question live. Okay, this question is from Jim from the forum. Dear Carla and Monica, I have a question regarding my ongoing, seemingly permanent malaise. Do you know of any method by which I may determine what is causing this discomfort? I meditate daily, which does seem to help a little, but I just cannot seem to shake this feeling of not wanting to be here anymore. As a sixth density wanderer and a sixth density walk-in, this malaise may well be just a severe form of wanderer blues, or it could be as a result of taking an antipsychotic medication that I may well not actually need. This problem is compounded by the fact that I do not trust myself not to get lost in wishful thinking if I stop taking the meds. Can you suggest any means by which I may move forward from this situation, as I feel that I have hit a brick wall in terms of my current spiritual path and the desire to move to a point of greater contentment? Thank you both so much for your service, Jim.
Jim, thank you so much for writing in. I'll be glad to share with you anything I know. And sometimes when you're talking to someone, it really does have to be intuitional, because of the fact that none of us is sad in the same way. None of us grieves just the same way. Not a one of us feels exactly the same as another. So I could never say, well, I know what you're feeling, and yes, it's just the wanderer's malaise, or whatever you want to talk about and call it something. It's comforting in a way that you can call it something. But on the other hand, the stark truth of it is that regardless of what you call it, there it is, and it's a very difficult thing to bear. And handling it isn't just a matter of finding a way to talk about it. It's also finding a way to make it different. And it's so hard to make things different. So let's dig in here and let's think. Number one, if some medication is involved, there needs to be some way you can get a handle on what the medication's doing. If I were you, I would take very careful notes. I don't know what the periodicity is on your medication, but I would want to find out for myself anything I could about how I reacted to the drug, you know, when I took it, what happened, is it doing what the drug's supposed to do, et cetera. You know, pay attention to that. Pay attention to your energy to see how things are going. Make sure that you are able to stay coherent and stuff like that, you know, because some drugs do kind of wig you out. So there are things you can do just intellectually, logically, and I would encourage you to do that just so you can begin to get a handle, a non-subjective handle, a more objective handle on your situation. I have known quite a few people that tended towards being melancholy, and you could categorize any of them as being a wanderer, being an outsider. You could also look at other things about people that differentiate one from another. One person wants to be around people. Another person thinks, oh gosh, I'd sure like some alone time. One person doesn't really think about who he's with, because he's doing what he's doing. He's pretty self-involved. Another person is pretty needy and doesn't, you know, have something to do on a Sunday afternoon just because it's Sunday afternoon. So the fabric of happiness is not one that can be cut very well, and it certainly can't be cut to tailor to your moods. So you basically have to just get straighter and straighter with yourself, see yourself through your moods, gradually fall in love with yourself. Meditation's good. If you do it, great. If you don't do it, there's no use beating yourself up over it. And I think that's probably the second big key. As a wanderer, it's very easy for you to be influenced by thoughts. You can take somebody's good energy and you can spiral up. You can take somebody's poopy energy and spiral right down. And you can do it to yourself. So in your thinking, be proactive about keeping a tuning going, keeping a smile on your lips and something that you're grateful for in your mind. Because the way that you think, the way you encourage yourself to think, just the things that are on your mind from moment to moment, create your life and create your experience. So the more that you think about the things you want to think about and rejoice in the things that you love. The less time there even is to say, alas, alack, oh my, oh dear, what shall I do? One thing that is very expensive for a sensitive person like yourself is self-pity. And I encourage you just to shake it off when you feel it. It takes the energy away from you. When you do feel that spiraling down, just encourage yourself to get up, change your environment or put some good piece of music on that's going to make a difference in how you feel, and get back in the game.
That's all very, very good advice, Carla. Thank you. And I would add one quick thing to that. Good old exercise can work wonders to getting the motivation going and get the mood change. So that might be something, if possible, to add to it.
Yeah, that's true.
We have probably time for one last question, and I'm going to use this question from Pickle. Yes, that's his name, from our Bring Forth forum. He says, I have a question. Is it accurate to say that divine creation would not be complete without the existence of STS and negative polarity? I assume that the creation would be a failure without its continued existence.
Well, in terms of the cosmology of those who gave us the raw material and the Confederation in general, it would certainly be inaccurate to say that the universe was complete without service to self. And to say that service to self and service to others and everything that there is all part of one thing, is the beginning of it. So, yes. And given that that's the kind of world we live in, then it would definitely be incomplete without it.
So what would you say is the purpose of the STS polarity?
Well, the purpose of power is to do work. And there are two basic ways to look at that. You want to work and protect your family and support your nation state and defend your stuff and, you know, be real belligerent about it. And that work turns into defense and service to self. You know, if you think about the way armies are made and the way that modern companies are, you know, it's just business. It can be pretty harsh, but it's just business. So I think you can see it. All the way that it works out is that we have all these choices. We can choose the kind of use of power that makes us amass things and have lots of things and have power over other people. Or we can find that we enjoy having power to do something really nice, you know, make a nice meal or to do a nice job on something or to create a song or treat somebody well, you know. So there are just a ton of choices to be made to see who the creator is. And the creator, I think, is just endlessly exploring itself. So it keeps, you know, getting more, I suppose, more ramified, more complex as more existence gives it more experience.
You know, there's been a lot of discussion on the Bring Forth Forum about the polarities, about STS and STO. And for those that are new to the Law of One, STS is that stands for service to self, and STO is service to others. And it's the two polarities that is discussed at great length in the Law of One material. And I think there's been, you know, just recently there was a discussion about, well, it seems like some people are bending over backwards trying to accept the STS path and almost being too nice and not even acknowledging that, that there is such a thing as evil in the world. And my understanding was that the Ra group explained to us the nature of what we call evil here on this planet, and it really explained why it exists. But do you think maybe we can go too far in trying to accept this evil? And, I mean, how do you, in other words, decline the service of the STS polarity while at the same time making the choice for the STO?
Exactly. That's just it. You have to keep the condemnation that you have for a service to self act in the act itself, and don't look at the person that committed it, who made the terrible mistake, and try to look at that person as a person who made a terrible mistake. Otherwise, it's very difficult to be a New Testament forgiving person if you hold on to, you did this wrong, and, you know, it is wrong. It's wrong to murder, or it's wrong to steal. Then, it's just so easy to start cutting off people's heads and feeling that it's necessary as a preventative of crime, you know. The conversation on things like this can go on forever, because all of those great social questions, you know, what to do about the law, and all that inspires is locked within the wilderness of people's minds. And it's very difficult to find that beautiful blind lady that, you know, passes out justice that you see in all the statues of justice and liberty.
Well, the law of one really. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I don't think that it's accepting the service to self polarity as a good thing, in order simply to know that that's how it works, that's how the game works.
Exactly. Thank you for saying that, because there's been some confusion. I can see in the discussions there's a lot of confusion about that, because Ra talks about acceptance and love, and, you know, loving, you know, finding the love in the present moment and seeing the love in the other person, even if they are STS. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that you accept their actions, as, because that's not your choice. If you're STO, then obviously,
that's right.
You know, so it's okay to make that choice and have those boundaries, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm. Certainly it is. You'd be lost without the ability to make ethical choices.
So, okay, we have just enough time for maybe one last very quick question, and this is from Wonder Man. And Wonder Man would like to hear about your experience as an actress and filmmaker.
It was an experience I never expected to have, and I must say it was a lot of fun. Let me put you back in the scene. This was after Don and I had gotten together in 1968, 1969, had written a book called The Crucifixion of Esmeralda Sweetwater, which was a really good little novel, and we wanted to make a movie out of it. So Don found a guy that he promised to make a movie out of any script that had sex and violence in it. So Don and I sat down and wrote a script that has sex and violence in it. Of course, it turned out to be a comedy about zombies from other planets that were being brought to this planet and substituting for regular people and blah. Anyway, the people all came in the day before shooting began. I was up all night the night before shooting began, because when the producer came in, he did not have a shooting script, and in that next 12 hours, and I had food poisoning at the time too, folks, this is showbiz, I came up with a full shooting schedule and everything that went with that. So then the next problem was that we discovered that the lady that had the lead role, well, not a lead big role, but the secondary lead role, she was supposed to be topless. She was, that was supposed to get us the rating, you know, that was racy enough for drive-ins. So she had to be topless. And this beautiful woman with every right to be proud came into town, took one look at the script, which she hadn't seen before, and said that she was a star, not a comedian. And she stalked off the set, never to be seen again. So I found the guys looking at me very funny, you know, like Don takes off his sunglasses and puts them on me and looks. Just stand up and turn around. I get a blonde wig, some boots, and I become Ruthie, the one that loses her top. Now, you got to understand, I am a sylph-like being. I was a very small woman as a young woman, and I never had any kind of a bosom until I gained weight in middle age. As a young girl, I was slender and small. And when you're waiting for a big X-rated topless role, and this woman comes on, it is small. it was very funny.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
I was also keeping track of the how long each scene was and where you cut, you know, so that the editor would have stuff to work from to cut it together. And so I was writing down details from, you know, when the filming would start, I would have a number on the camera, and then when it would stop, there would be a number, and that's how many feet went by. And then I didn't have a stopwatch, but somebody was trying to give me a rough time when, you know, when it took place, which is all crazy. So anyway, for about 2 days there when I was doing my part, I didn't even have a shirt on. It was devastating to my personal life, but it was fun. And, you know, they always say, you know, that show business is fun, and it was. We had a wonderful time making that movie, and I'll be very proud that we made the movie and got it actually into drive-ins as long as I live, because more than half of the films in Hollywood to get through all that system with all that money, they don't make it. And we did. Mm. We actually did show the film The Girl Snatchers a long time ago.
I was just going to say, tell us the name, because I know that's the next question.
Girl Snatchers. Okay. We called it The Hitman of Mount Biang Chao, but that didn't make it through the final draft. Everybody was
okay.
Like, a what? So there you go. Wander Man, there's the star of the incredible hit, The Girl Snatchers.
All right. So you are famous in more ways than one. Okay, we are out of time. Thank you, everyone. And we will be here next week, March 23rd at 8 o'clock Eastern. And the week after that, on March 30th, we're going to have a special guest, Toby Wheelock, creator and webmaster of the websites LawOfOne.info and wiki.lawofone.so. Be sure and check that out for our special guest. That ought to be interesting. And we are out of time. We'll see you next week. Have a good week. And check us out at llresearch.org and bringforth.org. That's bring4th.org.